Today's episode features a return visit from Nicholas Johnson. A native of Iowa City, he has worked on both coasts, most notably in Washington, D.C., as Federal Communications Commissioner during the Lyndon B. Johnson administration. Now back in Iowa City, he recently retired from teaching law at the University of Iowa and has served on the school board and continues to write on many subjects. He recently spoke with us about his new book, Columns of Democracy, and then about the future of electric cars. Today's topic is Big Pharma, or more precisely, Big Pharma advertising. This is a timely topic based on last week's news of a controversy over the FDA's approval of the sale of a Biogen version of an Alzheimer drug, despite a scathing assessment by the FDA's outside panel of neurological experts. The price of this patented drug is $56,000 a year. Nicholas Johnson recently had a piece published in the Gazette on June 8th called Ask Your Doctor About Big Pharma Ads, another example of Americans paying corporations to join their sales force. Nicholas Johnson, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for the invitation, Holly. Yeah, we won't talk about pharmaceutical TV commercials today, but I'd like to put that in a bit of context because television is something that impacts virtually every aspect of our lives. What we think we know, as Mark Twain said, the problem's not what we don't know, it's what we know that ain't so. Our attitudes about people who look like us, belief that who we are, our status is somehow a function of the stuff we own, and so all kinds of aspects of our lives. And the commercials are especially powerful. Businesses can go from being little startups to major corporations by advertising on TV. Consumers kind of like to deny that they have any impact. There was a time when I was doing a lot of public lectures, and I was doing a survey of what toothpaste people used, because academics tend to use Crest, because Crest had something from the American Dental Association, and academics like to go with other academics. And so they were using Crest. And after a lecture, a woman came up to me and said, well, you know, I'm not influenced by the commercials. And I said, well, that's very interesting. I said, what toothpaste do you use? And she said, well, I use Gleam. Well, about that time, Gleam had the ad that it was for people who couldn't brush after every meal. And I said, you don't think the commercials influenced you, though? Oh, no, no, not because of the commercials. And I said, well, why do you buy Gleam? I'd be interested in knowing. He said, well, I just can't brush after every meal. She repeated the commercial. And television can do good as well as evil and harm. The Harvard College of Public Health at one point requested that some of the Hollywood producers and writers include a little fraction of a second scene in shows showing people fastening the seatbelt, especially police fastening the seatbelt before they started to drive. And they did a poll afterwards, and turned out that nationwide the use of seatbelts increased 14%. On the other hand, one of the worst examples were the cigarette commercials that we had when I first joined the FCC. Tobacco industry is an odd one in that it kills 400,000 of its consumers every year. And that's quite a loss in your customer base. And so they have to somehow figure out a way to find what the industry referred to as replacement smokers, people who will become addicted to smoking and can take the place of those who've already been killed off. The younger, the better. Well, we had something called the Fairness Doctrine, which said that a TV station had to carry information about controversial issues of public importance, and that in doing so, it had to present a range of views. And a young fellow named John Banzaff filed with the FCC a Fairness Doctrine complaint. He said cigarette commercials, putting forth the view that smoking is like football and sexy and something desirable in one's life, and there's another view, and that is that it kills people. And so the FCC decided that there should be anti-smoking commercials. Well, the industry was not fond of that idea because that was driving down sales. And so they went to Congress and essentially asked to have a ban on any cigarette advertising, something that they couldn't have agreed to among themselves without violating the antitrust laws otherwise, so that without cigarette commercials, there was no need anymore for anti-smoking commercials. So that's a little background into the role of television in public health.
Well, how does this have an impact on pharmaceuticals and the pharmaceutical industry, generic versus patented, for one thing?
Yeah, there are a couple of things here. I remember when I was a young boy growing up in Iowa City, there were people downtown who had kind of small billboards hanging off the front of them and the back of them advertising products, and they got paid to display these company names around downtown Iowa City. Now, today, people are paying the companies to display the company names and logos on their hats and shirts and pants and shoes. And so this business of persuading doctors to write prescriptions for drugs that we don't need and may cause harm or with no more significant benefits than a generic, that may be just another example of how we are paying the corporations to join in their sales force. But it's really much worse than that, because we have a study from something called the West Health Policy Center, and they reported that if the current rise in drug prices continues, that there are going to be some patients who are simply unable to pay those prices with or without insurance, and that's going to result in possibly in the premature deaths of some 112,000 people a year, making it one of the leading causes of death in the United States, ahead of diabetes and influenza, pneumonia, and kidney disease. So once again, we're number one. We're number one in defense spending, number of percentage of persons in prisons, and now these Ask Your Doctor commercials. This time, we're not just number one, we are almost the only one. There are only two countries that permit advertising drugs directly to consumers. The other is New Zealand, and it has a ferocious opposition to this going on right now. So you think about this. Advertising to the patient. This is the advertising of a product to purchasers who are legally forbidden to buy it. You can't just go into a drugstore and buy prescription medicines. You got to nag your doctor for the permission slip called a prescription. So it's kind of like when they were advertising on TV toys for kids. Aside from a few children who are energetic entrepreneurs or those with advanced degrees in parental manipulation, those kids could not buy what the capitalists were advertising to them. So that's kind of like Big Pharma's Ask Your Doctor TV spots, except now we're the children and the doctors are our parents. Just like the children had to nag their parents, we got to nag our doctors to buy these drugs that the doctor hasn't prescribed for us.
That brings me to a question, though. You know, you have parents that know how to resist kids, especially when it's something the kids are asking for that is either unnecessarily expensive or possibly harmful. Why don't the doctors simply say, no, we're going to prescribe a generic, or you don't need this drug?
Well, the strong ones with more customers than they can possibly handle do that. And I have a doctor who's inclined to come up with solutions that don't require any medicine, or if a medicine would be helpful, chooses the cheapest generic for me to buy. But many doctors find this destroying the doctor-patient relationship, and that it's just a lot easier to go ahead and write the prescription for the patient if you know that it's not going to do real harm to them. The worst that's going to happen is it's going to be a waste of their money, either because they didn't need it at all or because a generic would have been a small fraction of that price. But they do have to have these health warnings in the ads. But by the time, if you ever listen to those lists of side effects, which like as not include the possibility of death,
Well, I do listen to those, and that would put me off from wanting to ask for some of those drugs.
Well, the problem is that people don't listen to them because the commercial is designed mm-hmm. to keep you from listening. It's sort of, oh, look at the squirrel. They've got mm-hmm. all these diversions in the video while the audio is going on with this long list of horrible things that could possibly happen to you. And so you've got the happy grandparents with their happy little kids, and you've got folks out playing in the backyard, or you've got a wedding or some other community gathering, or you've got a couple out on the deck of their cabin looking out over the lake, or they're fishing or whatever. But these are all real happy and animated scenes that kind of absorb your attention while they're reading off these side effects.
So obviously this is a lucrative business. What has the economic impact been? And then what would you say is the remedy?
Yeah, this is a huge business and rapidly increasing, which is why they're concerned about the deaths of people who can't afford them and that $56,000 new one. In 2001, sales were $390 billion. They increased threefold, and in 2020, they were $1.27 trillion. And at that time, they were spending nearly $7 billion a year on direct-to-consumer Ask Your Doctor commercials. Now, they also spend $30 billion a year wooing doctors with speaking fees and travel and meals and free samples and what they call education, trying to persuade the doctors to prescribe these medicines. You know, we're supposed to go to doctors because few, if any, patients are really educated or equipped to accurately self-diagnose themselves or to choose the remedies. And doctors have tried to beat this back. They're very opposed in New Zealand, and they were here in the United States. The American Medical Association made a strong case for banning these ads, but it was unsuccessful. And you ask, well, how can that be? The doctors don't want it, and still it goes on? Well, look at these numbers. Every year between 1999 and 2018, the pharmaceutical industry spent an average of $1.5 billion on political contributions and lobbying. So try to get any constraint on this through the Congress, and I wish you luck. I think one of the lessons we can draw from this is that, of course, there are things that capitalism can do better than public programs, but there are some things that really aren't best provided in that way. One is private prisons, where there's an incredible conflict of interest on the part of the prison owners to keep the prisoners there as long as possible. And another is this pharmaceutical portion of our nation's health care, which I think by now should be obvious to everybody, is not a function of our health care that ought to be handled by capitalists. And that's what we've now got.
So what would the remedy be for this? Public policy, it seems, better attention to the American Medical Association.
Yeah, I think the government pays for a lot of this research now. Pfizer is going to make a whopping multi-billion dollar profit off of selling its vaccines that the government helped develop. And I think we could, as we do for the Veterans Administration hospitals and what other countries do, they bargain with the pharmaceutical companies over price. That proposal's been made and been beaten back by the pharmacy companies and their lobbyists and their campaign contributions. So I think if the federal funding of scientific research continues, and then the pharmaceuticals and especially the generics are available, and Medicare and Medicaid and can negotiate with the pharmaceutical companies over prices, have at least some leverage. Right now, we just pay whatever they ask. I think there are ways we could do it.
It sounds to me like the real remedy is political.
I think you're absolutely right. I think when they're spending whatever it was, $1.5 billion a year on political campaign contributions and lobbying, that it's going to be tough to get anything through the House or Senate from people who are being paid by the pharmaceutical industry and who are desperate to raise the multi-million-dollar war chests that are now required to run for office. I remember the time when a California senator told me he spent a half of every day walking across the street because they can't do it from their offices. And he would go to where he could sit and engage in dialing for dollars, calling up major donors and trying to raise money. I calculated back then, when it was a lot cheaper to run for the U.S. Senate, that every morning when a senator wakes up 365 days a year for the 6 years, every morning they wake up, they have to somehow, some way, come up with $10,000 before they go to bed that night. Well, Big Pharma is there to help them out with that incredible responsibility. So doing something about public financing of campaigns and controlling expenses and getting the dark money out of it and so forth would make a big difference if you want to try to come at it from as a political question of policy about politics and elections and that sort of thing.
Is there anything that could be done before that? Is there anything that can be done on the public's end, some kind of education, knowledge about how to interpret these commercials and how to see through or be aware of what is actually happening?
Well, I think the commercials could be banned by the FCC on the grounds that I've laid out here. I mean, if we could do it for cigarettes, I don't see why we can't do it for harmful drugs. I mean, seriously, you're advertising a product to a consumer base that is legally prohibited from buying the product. So the only consequence of the advertising is that the patient is putting pressure on the doctor, which incidentally works. I mean, when they advertise to the patients, sales go up. As the prescriptions written by doctors go up, many of whom might have written a prescription for a generic instead, but they don't want to have an argument with their patient. So I think if we could ban cigarette advertising, we ought to be able to ban pharmaceutical advertising, because the customer base is simply not well enough educated and cannot possibly be well enough educated in a 60-second or 30-second commercial. We're just not in the business of diagnosing ourselves. That's why we have doctors. That's why we go to doctors. It's why we go to other specialists. People with automobile parts don't advertise. You know, ask your mechanic if this shock absorber might be right for you. You go to your mechanic who makes that judgment. You talk to the mechanic about it. So this is kind of a bogus advertising attempt from the beginning. Advertising to people who don't have the knowledge to evaluate the commercial and don't have the knowledge to diagnose themselves. That's why we use plumbers and auto mechanics and electricians and bring them into our home.
Well, maybe this talk will at least help to make people more aware of what is going on in these commercials.
We sure hope so. And if you got a problem, don't watch the commercials. Go to your doctor. If you have to have medicine, isn't there a generic that would do just as well? It'll make your doctor happy. It'll make you healthier. And the pharmaceutical companies are going to be able to get by just fine.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Nicholas Johnson, retired from teaching law at the University of Iowa. He has also served on the Iowa City School Board, former FCC commissioner in the Lyndon B. Johnson administration, and he continues to write on many subjects. You can find his work on his websites at columnsofdemocracy.com, from dctoiowa.blogspot.com, and nicholasjohnson.org. Nicholas Johnson, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Holly. It's been fun.